From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the cosmos and all its collective time zones, each and every one covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and it certainly is my honor and privilege to be here to escort you through the weekend. It's going to be a pretty good night. James Gilliland in the next hour. This hour, we'll do unscreened open lines, which means you dial and let it ring till I answer. But then when I do, you turn down your radio right away, like instantly as you hear me answer the phone. And then the rules are pretty simple. The interesting people get airtime. The others probably fall away pretty quickly. So that's the measure of airtime, generally. Of course, you could have a short and sweet and very important message, I suppose. All right, we'll look at the webcam tonight. A little more of a tease. You may recall I went and saw the incredible Robert Bigelow Aerospace facility, and that's another little tease photograph. I'm taking the less important photographs, as it were, although it's really a cool photograph in a lot of ways. This is a photograph that I took over the shoulder of the helicopter pilot as we were approaching the mountain range between here and Las Vegas. And I think it's a very, very cool shot. You let me know what you think. All right. We'll look at the world briefly, very briefly. Democrats fail in bid to vote on surge. The Senate gridlocked on the Iraq war in a sharply worded showdown Saturday as Republicans foiled a Democratic bid to repudiate President Bush's deployment of 21,500 additional combat troops. Now, the vote was 56-34. That would fall four short of the 60 they needed to do it. Democratic presidential hopefuls in the Senate cast symbolic votes Saturday against President Bush's effort to boost troop levels in Iraq amid calls by campaign rivals for Congress to embrace far stronger measures to end the war. Senator John McCain skipped the vote. He is campaigning in Iowa, perhaps more productive for him. I have always been a fan of Senator McCain's, and I know many of you are as well. Looks like he's running. He's going to be a very, very strong contender. It's going to be an interesting presidential race, don't you think? A woman? John McCain? A black man? And a whole field, really. By the time they all get done, who knows how many will be in there, but it's going to be a very, very interesting presidential race, and perhaps one of the most interesting in our collective lifetimes, I would imagine. A man accused of roughing up a Nobel laureate in San Francisco at a hotel earlier this month was arrested Saturday. Montgomery Township police arrested Eric Hunt, 22, of Sussex County, New Jersey, at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Faces charges that include attempted kidnapping, false imprisonment, child abuse, stalking, battery, commission of a hate crime. That's quite a list. The mere idea that U.S. soldiers on leave from Iraq see Rio's carnival as a free-floating sex party has Brazilians totally outraged. A report in Britain's The Guardian newspaper that American soldiers are looking to Rio for R&R. Now, especially the sex tourism part, prompted many Brazilians to say the gringos have got it all wrong. That might come from what's on gringo TV all the time. I mean, that's what it looks like down there, right? Britney Spears. Now, what has she done to herself? She appeared in a tattoo parlor in the San Fernando Valley with her head shaved completely bald. Video on KABC television showed the newly shorn Spears with tiny tattoos on the back of her neck as she sits Friday night for a new tattoo, a pair of red and pink lips. Why would Britney Spears do that? Anna Nicole Smith embalming completed. And that's as much as I'm going to read. The TV has been haunted, haunted, I tell you, all week long by Anna Nicole Smith. Now, I know there's $500 million at issue here, I suppose, but I'm sick and tired of that story. And I, you know, I've hardly seen it. I haven't been watching a lot of television. We've been very, very busy here at the Bell House. But every time you turn it on, it's haunted by Anna Nicole Smith. Enough said. Next time you dread a trip to the dentist, consider the plight of poor Tusco the elephant. This one caught my eye. It took veterinarians and a dentist nearly 5 hours Saturday to remove what was left of an elephant's infected tusk at the Oregon Zoo. It took a chainsaw, handsaws, as well as a drill that can punch through concrete to do the job. I hope there was some numbing available. Anyway, hey, by the way, Chinese New Year is upon us. It is the year of the pig. Now, the pig is not a celebrated character most places. You know, I mean, there's, you know, he eats like a pig. He's a pig, she's a pig, whatever. But actually, the year of the pig, I read, and this is the year of the golden pig. Chinese New Year. This is very special. Comes about every 60 or 600 years, depending upon what you believe. And it is said that children born in the year of the pig have wealth, success, and so the Chinese are getting their wives pregnant as quickly as they can. They all want children in the year of the pig. And so I guess that bodes well for the little bell on the way. In a moment, we'll look at a little of the rest of the news. Very interesting. A Delta II rocket lifted five NASA satellites, science satellites, into space Saturday evening from Cape Canaveral. Now, that launch had been delayed by a day of upper-level winds. The strong winds would have affected the rocket's path. Probes are part of a mission to figure out the source of powerful geomagnetic substorms in the Earth's atmosphere. Scientists hope the $200 million mission will somehow unravel the mystery behind these storms that can damage communication satellites, disable power grids, and shoot high levels of radiation down on spacewalking astronauts and airplane passengers flying over northern latitudes. Scientists believe they also periodically intensify these spectacular light shows called the Northern Lights, or, if you will, Aurora Borealis. For 30 years, people have tried to understand what causes the onset of these substorms. However, I guess we still don't. It's still elusive. We just don't know. And I thought we did. I thought we understood that when the sun erupted 8 minutes later or so, we would get the first particles. And then, oh, I don't know, 24 to 36 hours later, the heavier, slower particles that would cause all of this. So I'm not sure what they mean by substorms. At any rate, scientists apparently are having a great debate about what causes these substorms, so-called. And this spacecraft with many satellites is supposed to settle the argument at a cost of only $200 million. This was an interesting email that led me to do a little research. Art, I'm sure you've already heard about this, and it was true, I had. But this story broke at the end of CBS News on February 12th, and it made my hair stand on end. Bees are disappearing from 22 states in the U.S. Not dying, disappearing, vanishing. No little bee bodies. No apparent predation. No obvious bee disease. The report and video both mention that bee pollination is the only way that many crops are able to be pollinated, of course. This, on top of crop loss from weather and so forth, could be pointing to a serious loss of crop supply here in the U.S., and no mention of any bee loss in the rest of the world. Scary and mysterious. So, looking a little closer, something is killing the nation's honeybees, that's for sure. Dave Hackenberg of Central Pennsylvania had 3,000 hives, and figures now he's lost all but about 800. That's from 3,000 to 800. In labs at Pennsylvania State University, the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture, and elsewhere in the nation, researchers have been stunned by the number of calls about the mysterious losses. Every day you hear of another operator who's lost the bees. It's just causing so much death so quickly, it's startling. At stake is the work the honeybees do, and it's non-trivial. They pollinate more than $15 billion worth of U.S. crops, including Pennsylvania's apple harvest, the fourth largest in the nation, worth $45 million, New Jersey's cranberries and blueberries. While a few crops, like corn, wheat, are pollinated by the wind, most crops actually need bees, and without them, crop yields would fall dramatically. Agronomists estimate that Americans owe one in three bites of all your food to bees. Now, that's worth thinking about. We Americans owe one in three bites of food to bees. The problem caps 20 years of honeybee woes, including two mites that killed the valuable insect and a predatory beetle that attacked the honeycombs of weak or dead colonies. Marianne Fraser, who does this work for a living, says it's by far the most alarming. One of the first to notice the latest die-off was Hackenberg, somebody named Hackenberg, who lives in Lewisburg, north of Harrisburg in Union City. In his son, truck about 3,000 hives up and down the East Coast. And as was mentioned, they are down now to about 800. So as if we didn't need something else to worry about, there you have it. One in three bites of food, you can thank the bees. And the bees are mysteriously, strangely, bizarrely, simply disappearing. The long-term stability of the massive ice sheets of Antarctica, which have the potential to raise sea levels by hundreds of meters, has now been called into question with the discovery of fast-moving rivers of water sliding beneath their base. This is bad. Scientists analyzing satellite data were absolutely astonished to discover the size of the vast lakes and river systems flowing beneath the Antarctic ice sheets. And of course, they're worried they may lubricate the movement of the glaciers as they flow into the surrounding sea. So in other words, if you can picture it in your mind, you've got these large ice sheets, but now you've got these rivers, these vast areas of moving water beneath them. And what they're virtually worried about is that the whole mess is going to slide into the sea. So much to worry about these days, global warming. No matter what the cause you happen to believe of it is, whether it's a natural cyclic thing or it's the hand of man, it doesn't really matter. It's occurring in the wake of global warming and the genetic manipulation of seeds. A lot of countries now around the world are starting seed banks. That's a pretty good idea. Latest seed bank. And when they begin seed banks, I would say we should worry because they're worried. They're spending money on saving seeds for the worst. Latest seed bank will freeze seeds inside a mountain in Norway called Svalbard, where they'll lay frozen and dry, even if glaciers melt, sea levels rise, and the worst happens. CNN quotes agricultural expert Carrie Fowler as saying, quote, "It will be the best freezer in the world. By several orders of magnitude, the seeds will be safe there for decades. It's a place that's a safety backup, and we hope we never have to use it." Well, I hope they don't, too. This from Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country as well. You wouldn't know it from reading the national news, but local news outlets all over the country are reporting UFO sightings. We are having a flap. There's no question about it. Tonight's guest, I'm sure, will expand on that. He talks about UFOs, but they're being seen all over the world. UFO sightings, in this case, that look very much like the famous Phoenix lights that were seen by hundreds of people about 10 years ago now. Has it really been 10 years? In the Maine Sun Journal, Maggie Gill Ostern quotes Sheriff's Department dispatcher Bill Hoyt as saying, quote, "The phone was ringing off the hook. People were seeing Well, a string of 7 or 8 lights very low in the sky that were fixed. There also were reports of jet engine noise low to the ground. Hoyt called the FAA and was able to rule out any military exercises. So what were they? Well, nobody knows. All right, we're going to go to unscreened open lines now. And again, that means that you have to turn your radio off immediately as you hear me say you're on the air. It also means that you must be interesting. You must have something of some magnitude to say. West of the Rockies, the number, 1-800-618-8255. Listen carefully now. East of the Rockies, that's a lot of territory, 1-800-825-5033. If you are a first-time caller, we love them. It's area code 818-501-4721, 4721, but you can only use that once in your life. The wild card line, and there are many of those, so your chance of getting through there is pretty good. Area code 818-501-4109. And finally, if you're outside the country, we have an international line. Get hold of your operator and have her dial for you if you're outside the country. It's 800-893-0903. That said, let us go explore. Wildcard line, you are on the air. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Bert. My name's Matt. I'm just calling because I want to tell you I agree with you about 9/11. I don't think our president or any other president would like to see the towers get bombed. But I do think that it's a shame that these workers who went down there breathed in all those toxic fumes and all the dust, and the government's not doing a whole lot to help them out.
Well, you know what surprised me?
What's that?
I was talking to somebody else earlier today about that, and it's that, if you recall correctly, it was within hours, literally within hours of the 9/11 disaster, they were saying, oh, the air is fine. Now, that's crazy. Let's think about this for a moment, folks. Buildings containing a lot of asbestos, a lot of just unimaginable amounts of chemicals burned, crashed, infected the air. It was so thick that breathing apparatus was required. And within a day or two, the government was saying, oh, the air is okay. Well, as we all know now, there have been substantial numbers of people who have come down with terrible lung disease from breathing that air. And I don't understand how they could say the air was okay. Maybe somebody did some measurement somewhere and it said it was breathable. I don't know, but it's quite a stretch. And I have a very difficult time believing that all was well. Just literally, 24, 48 hours after the buildings came down, no way. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Go ahead.
Am I on the air right now?
Yes, that's when I say you're on the air, that has me.
Okay, I'm leaving the room right now. I turned my radio off because I know how you are.
All right, go ahead.
I know you talk about shadow people and stuff all the time.
Yes.
And I clean the doctor's office, and they always have this deceased, like, a whiteboard, and they have deceased persons on there. But then they have their records room. And I saw a shadow like that went up from, it's probably an 8-foot ceiling, but then went over it, and it looked like the Grim Reaper or something. And I wonder what you think about that.
I don't know what to think about that. It is logical, I suppose, that in a place where a number of people have died, whether that would be a hospital or a doctor's office, I don't think that many die in a doctor's office, but certainly in a hospital, where surgical operations are going on and where you have critical care units in place and people are, you know, they die all the time. It happens. If, in fact, we go on and we don't quite go all the way on right away, and I do believe that, I have good reason to believe that, then, yes, you might have seen somebody who has passed away. And they might appear to you as a shadow person. That is to say, somebody now in another dimension. Sort of. I'm Art Bell. Mysterious and disconcerting. David in Oregon City, Oregon, adds, Ed Dame said the bees would die off. Do you remember, Art? Said they'd go blind. Something about a change in the sun. And to be fair, Ed Dames did say that about the bees. And what's the latest news about the bees? Well, we're not sure, but they are mysteriously disappearing. We'll be right back. Well, the last thing in the world we want is for Ed Dames to be right about nearly anything. But he may be calling this one. Bees, all of a sudden. How weird is that? Wildcard Line 3, you're on the air. Hi.
My name's Gary.
Hello, Gary.
And, pardon?
I said hello.
All right. I have a prediction. When Diane Sawyer was talking to the man in Iran, and when she was asking about war and stuff like that, he directed his talk to her about springtime. So I think in springtime, this spring, something's going to happen over in Iran or Iraq because George Bush ordered 20,000 soldiers over there. And when that happens, there's going to be a lot of soldiers that's going to be in harm's way. And with that many soldiers over there, overseas, other countries will take advantage of that.
I don't disagree with you. I think that I think we're about to do something in Iran. All the signs point to imminent action with respect to Iran. Now, I think it would be a terrible mistake for us. On the other hand, we, the world, really cannot let them get the bomb, can we? It's damned if you do, and probably close to extinction if you don't. So I'm not sure what I would do if I was president. And are you really sure what you would do? If you saw Iran on the verge of getting the bomb, or perhaps making a deal with Korea and obtaining one right away, what would you do if you were president? And before criticizing what any president does, I think it's well worthwhile to sit for a moment and try and imagine yourself being responsible for the safety and welfare of the American people. What would you do under those circumstances or some others you could name? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good evening, Art. This is Wally in Abilene, Texas.
Hi, Wally.
Hi. And several times in the past, you've shared your story about you had the urge about your car and the desire to, or the urge that you needed to move it, and then I guess somebody rammed in behind it shortly afterwards.
Yeah, I got to actually watch them go down the sidewalk, get in the car, start it up, slam it into reverse, and hit my car.
Well, this week I was shopping for new cars, and I just got a sudden urge, like, more. The salesman was with me, and as I walked up to this car, I said, is this a sinking feeling that you better check this car for gas? You better check it. It was just an overwhelming urge. Well, the car was so pinned in, so tight in the lot, and as soon as I started it, of course, I'm checking mirrors to back out and everything, and I didn't check for gas. And as soon as we got out on the freeway, it ran out. And of course, fortunately, we didn't end up like your car did, but we got it pulled off, and got back to the dealership. And anyway, it's just so strange how that urge just came over me. And
no, it isn't. It's not strange. It seems strange to you because you didn't listen to it, and then it registered in your brain, and then you didn't listen to it. You got out on the freeway, and boy, it happened. It's not strange though. I think that a lot of us have these a lot of times. Now, what I had was not subtle, and that's a very important point. what I had was, it was like giant ocean waves crashing over my brain again and again and again, each time getting stronger, until finally I would say a nasty word and get up and go and look at my car. Wasn't really interested. I just was forced to do it by these strong emotions, these strong, that's the only way I can describe it, like crashing ocean waves, something you just totally can't ignore. Most times, it's much more subtle than that. And you know something's going to happen. But you discard the feeling. And then it happens. How many times has that happened to you? Those who learn to listen to their inner selves, it sounds kind of new agey, right? Listen to your inner self. But those who learn to listen to their inner selves have a great deal more success in life, in whatever they endeavor to do. It's fascinating. First time caller line, you're on the air. Going once, going twice, gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, this is Gloria from Portland.
Hi, Gloria.
I'm calling, in fact, about, it has to do with this precognitive experience that you had with your car.
Okay.
And in reference to a guest you had a couple of weeks ago who was a woman scientist.
Yes.
Yes. It was so frustrating to me to listen to her that I couldn't continue to listen to the program, but I just wanted to say that I admire so much the way you handle your guests, and I know that.
Why was it frustrating to you?
To me, because everything has to be proven, and I'm convinced that science can't prove everything. And
well, I am too.
Yeah, and what I wanted to say was that I appreciate so much, and I noticed that you asked the very questions many times that I would ask. And I think most of your listeners would agree that you're a great intermediary for all of us. And I really appreciate the diplomacy and the restraint you use with guests that you may disagree with, but you are so tactful, and you ask such appropriate questions.
Thank you. That's a very high-level compliment for me. I really, really appreciate it. It is a high-level compliment for me. That is what I try to do. I try to anticipate, I guess, and that should be the mark of any decent interviewer. You ask the questions that should be occurring to the audience out there at about the same time, and then follow up on them. And one important element in all of that is listening to what your guest or your caller actually is saying. That leads down some very interesting roads, let's put it that way. So no matter who they are, whether I agree or disagree with them really does not matter. There is, however, something I would like to note that that's going on, and that is that people who disagree with you, no matter what the subject, conclude that you're bad at what you do. Now, a person's interviewing skills are what they are, good, bad, or indifferent. And their opinions are something else altogether. And I guess it takes some measure of intellect to discern between the two. That is to say, between an opinion that you might or might not agree with and their skill at doing their job, no matter who they happen to encounter. That may seem a little difficult to understand, but those who need to hear it, I'm sure, understand it. Wildcard Line 2, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Mark. I talked right from Canada.
Hey, Mark.
How are you doing tonight? You must have your hands busy doing the phones like this.
I'm just fine.
Oh, great. I was just calling. I wonder if you ever heard of anybody speaking of like a UFO as a blue orb that may have left like a trail of a blue line behind it as it went across the sky.
It sounds to me as though that's what you saw.
That is what I experienced. Yes, one evening in northern Pennsylvania, they're coming down south to New York State. Just about as I crossed the state line, there's a slight grade and I wouldn't say a mount, but a fair hill. And as I was climbing the hill, I saw from the left a big blue orb with a long streaking tail, almost like as if you played with a glowing stick from a fire and you're swinging around.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've seen many of the same sort. I've seen green orbs, if you want to call them that, glowing balls of almost plasma. that leave a trail behind them, blue ones. Now, look, most times, more times than not, I guess it's fair to call them UFOs because they're unidentified flying objects, or they appear to be flying. Probably the majority of them are meteorites. And, you know, that's a fair and reasonable thing to say, and I'm sure it's also true, but not all of them are. Some of them are moving in ways that meteorites, or aircraft, if you will, simply don't move in. And that's a problem that we run into in ufology, and that is that it's easily debunked. Because, of course, the majority of the reports are something else. The majority of the reports are not real UFOs. And even I violate my own dictate. Real UFOs. What's a real UFO? A real unidentified flying object. I guess I'm trying to say something either man-made or not man-made, as in not human-made. There are some of those out there, but they are in the distinct minority. And most of what we see, like that truck driver, I'm sure, you know, is probably a meteorite. Though even those, I caution everybody, look, until you get to the smoking rock, as it were, don't say you only saw a meteorite, because you don't know that. Hello there, West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is John.
Hi, John.
Hey, all right, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
Good to have you. Where are you?
I'm from Wisconsin.
Okay.
I got a shadow person story that I want to tell you.
Boy, we're getting a lot of that. Okay.
Okay. I told this story to George a couple of weeks ago on a Friday night, but I want to tell you the story.
Okay.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm 25 years old, but it began in 1989. I was eight years old then, and it was either on a Saturday or a Sunday during either the spring, the summer, or the fall. And I was sitting in the living room, and I was getting up, and I was walking to my bedroom, and I was walking down the hallway, and before the hallway starts, there's the kitchen. And as I was walking down the hallway, out of the corner of my right eye, I saw like a black shadow. So I turned, and I was looking towards the kitchen, and out of the kitchen window, I could see a black shadow.
Out of the window, in other words, outside.
Yeah, it was... No. Yeah, the shadow was on the outside of the window, mm-hmm. and when I looked at the shadow, it quick ducked down. And but the freaky thing about it was part of its forehead was still sticking up from behind the window, and I was sitting there and I was staring at it and I was rubbing my eyes and everything.
After it ducked down, part of the forehead was still showing.
Yes, exactly, and I didn't tell my mom or my dad or my sisters. Because, you know, I'm an 8-year-old child, so they would probably thought either I was lying or I was seeing things. Now, flash forward to a couple weeks later, it was again like a sunny weekend day, and I went back inside, and I was sitting in the living room again, in a rocking chair watching TV. And I could feel, you know, that feeling that you get when there's someone watching you.
Oh, yes.
I turned behind my right shoulder because I could feel someone watch me. And I didn't think anything of it. I thought that I was going to see, like, you know, one of my sisters or my mom or my dad.
But.
And I saw that black shadow again. And I jumped out of my chair and I was spinning around. And I was thinking, this is it. I'm going to spin around and the shadow's going to be, like, right in front of me. But when I finally spun around, it was gone. Now, at this point, I'm thinking either I'm nuts or I'm really seeing this thing. So I didn't tell anyone about it. Now, sometime after that, it was finally at night, and I was sleeping in my bedroom.
Okay, we're almost out of time here.
Okay. I'll just say this part. I was sleeping in my bedroom. And I could feel something pushing on the corner of my bed, and I woke up and I saw that shadow person
again.
And yes, again. Now this is the kicker. A couple weeks after I saw that, my mom and dad got into an argument, so my dad slept in my bed, and I slept on the living room couch. And I woke up and I heard the scream, and when I woke up, I didn't see anything. And then a couple of minutes later, I could hear my mom and dad talking at the kitchen table.
Your dad had seen it.
Yes, and he said the same thing. He was sleeping, and he woke up and he saw a shadow man pushing on the end of the bed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then obviously, you have been visited, and are perhaps still being visited. I don't know. This whole shadow person thing began how many years ago now? And it just seems as though it's grown and grown and grown and grown. And I'm not sure what we have on our hands here, but if I had to guess, I'd say we're getting little slips into other dimensional realities. And occasionally when these shadow people are seen, or they recognize the fact that they're being seen, they suddenly are gone. Again, I have no idea what it is, but just guessing, I'd say we're getting an occasional little slip in some other dimensional reality of some sort. Wildcard Line 4, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes, going hello. Once?
Oh, hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I was listening to the radio. There's something.
Turn your radio off, sir.
Okay, it is off.
Okay, good. Now proceed.
Okay, I just have a story that I'd like to tell you. This was about 7 years ago.
Yes, sir.
I was driving home from work, and I was on the B shift. It was about a little after midnight. I seen a yellow star up in the sky.
A yellow star.
A yellow star. I kid you not. This sounds crazy, but I seen it on a movie, actually. I started blinking my headlights on and off, to see if I would attract it. And sure enough, I kid you not, this thing started coming my way. Started coming towards my car. This thing got so close to my car. Don't get me wrong, it was about 300-400 feet up in the air. But it got so close to my car that I started going home, because this was in my old neighborhood. I started going home. I'm looking out my windows, and this thing is hovering over my car following me home. So what I did is, it's crazy. I go home. My parents are like, you know, what's wrong with you? Looks like you just seen a ghost. I told them what happened. They laughed it off. My brother laughed it off. So my brother really started bugging me about it, laughing it off. And I said, hey, listen, get in the car. Let's go see if it's there. He gets in the car. We go to the same spot. Sure enough, that same yellow star is in the sky, okay?
And this time he sees it.
Yeah, so he sees it, and he goes, ah, that's nothing. That's just, I don't know what that is. That's just a star, that's just a star or something. I go, oh, yeah, watch this. I started blinking the lights again, the headlights.
and let me guess, here it comes.
And here it comes. My brother.
And what did your brother say?
My younger brother goes, oh, my God. He goes, is that starting to come our way? I go, yes, it is. I go, it did it to me a little while ago. He goes, oh, man, maybe we should move back or get out of here. I go, no, let's see what happens. Sure enough, this thing comes right over the freaking car, 300-400 feet up in the air again, and it's hovering over us. It was cigar-shaped. It was, like, all gray and, like, black with only a couple lights on it.
Uh-huh.
And my brother got out of the car, ran to a neighbor's house. He was ready to ring the doorbell. And this was like 1 o'clock in the morning. He's ready to ring the doorbell. And from that kind of commotion, this thing just took off. It just took off slowly and then just like hyperspace. You know what I mean? And
yes. So what do you conclude that you...
I have no clue. I don't know if it was some kind of, I don't know. This is the only experience I've ever had with some kind of identified flying object.
Well, and, it sounds to me like you're telling the truth.
I am.
You are. I can tell from your voice. You're just telling me the truth. Now, do you think that you saw something from somewhere else?
I don't know. It's weird because this thing was. See me. As my brother ran across the street to the neighbors, ready to ring the doorbell, I was standing right outside my driver's side door, outside of my car, and I was just standing there, waiting for it to do something. And as I'm doing that, my brother's screaming, get rid of it, get rid of it. You know, my brother was younger at the time.
Yeah, you seem. I've got to scoot here because we're at the top of the hour. But it sounds very much to me as though you're absolutely telling the truth. Now, what you saw, what kind of encounter you had, and why it cooperated with your flashing light and followed you, I don't know. Be fun to talk to your brother, though. I'm Art Bell.